Hello and welcome everybody to Around the Battleground. My name is LHS and I am your host. Today we've got a lot to talk about. Actually, no, we don't. That's a lie. There's not a whole lot to talk about, turns out. This was a bye week for the SML and SCL, I believe. That's half of our pro coverage there. And then the only game from last week we have to talk about is Splice versus Rival, and Splice is playing with a sub. So what can you really say about that game? You can't. Breaking it down is kind of pointless. I can say how well Solar Patrol looked, but there's not that much you can tell. So the biggest breakdown portions of today is going to be talking about Dignitas and Pittsburgh Knights playing, and then United and Trifecta. But I want to address the other part of the show as well. I sat down, pre-recorded this weekend. I sat down with Hindu Man and talked to him. It's almost an hour-long interview. Him and I sat down and talked about, you know, the difference for casting in Season 6, the difference in play. We talked about a lot, encompassing kind of all aspects of working at Skillshot and being a part of the, you know, Skillshot Pro community, from Hindu Man being a fan of the game himself, as a player, as a casual player, as a caster, as a, you know, management person. It's a really good interview. I probably one of my favorites I've done this far. I always like it when I can sit down and talk to some of the, you know, official people. I've talked to Tom and Hindu a lot in the past. I told you guys I was gonna get back on the interview stuff. So far right now I have the Hindu interview you guys are gonna see today, and then from there we've got the Niruma interview coming up for next week that I've already recorded. I've got Emilzy, who will be interviewed this weekend, so I think Saturday, right before his AMA, I'm going to record an interview with him. And then I've still got the Dignitas boys. I've got plenty of stuff in the pipeline for you guys. I'm excited to finally get that back on track. But let's go ahead and dive into talking about the games. Like I said, last week, Splice played their first set. Divius wasn't around, so they played with Solo or Troll. I will say that Solo or Troll played really well, played admirably, and maybe had a couple things gone differently in the set. They walk away with a win, maybe two. But playing with a sub right now puts you at a huge disadvantage. I mean, it always puts you at a disadvantage, but on the online portion in the past, you could kind of get away with it with a little bit more. But not so much anymore. So even though Solo played pretty well, it wasn't enough. They end up losing. And it's hard to gather too much information on that. I'm not including Splice in my power rankings yet because we haven't seen them at full strength. I know Divios is there now, so he should be available for this next game. And I think we'll learn a lot about Splice and what they're all about and if they still have Magic in a Bottle in that set. But for now, Splice looked decent, looked good, lacked a very integral piece of their entire offense and everything, so not a whole lot to talk about there. I think the focal point for me on that would be Solo or Troll looked good, and if these SPL solo laners don't measure up over the course of the year, I could see somebody getting kicked and Solo, you know, getting a shot. I really liked what I saw from him, and I think he's got a bright future ahead of him if he sticks with it and, you know, is given the chance. You know, that's the biggest thing always, right? If you can't do anything, if you're not given the chance. So let's look at today's games. I think we have the schedule up from today, starting with Dignitas and Pittsburgh Knights. We see Dignitas gets the 3-1 over Pittsburgh. Trifecta gets 3-0'd by E-United. And then tomorrow, we look forward to seeing Splice, Dignitas, and Trifecta. Pittsburgh Knights. So really interesting sets coming up tomorrow, and we'll talk about those. But for right now, I want to focus on that first set of the day, the Dignitas and Pittsburgh Knights. This was interesting. So I loved what I saw from Pittsburgh Knights. They brought out the Jormungandr mid and lost with it for game one, right? But a lot of the cast, a lot of, you know, people in the chat, people who were watching the game were like, why would you go with the Yorm? Why would you do that? It didn't do anything. But if you looked at the game, I believe he had top damage for his team. And that's, you know, nothing to shake a stick at. I know he's a mid, you know, of course they're going to get damage, but it takes skill. I mean, you know, if you're playing the Guardian mid, you're doing something right if you're top damage still. And so they stuck with it into game two, and they won with it. I was really pleasantly surprised that they decided to break out the Guardian mid, which I, you know, they're obviously meta is not the same. The game has changed pace, but I've been calling for Guardian mid to be tried out, a tanky mid. You know, we've seen the Vamana mid got tried out a few weeks ago. Things like that. I've been a big proponent of that and trying it, right? And so I was really excited and happy to see that finally kind of come to fruition. And I kind of want to see more of that. And I was really happy that they lost with it and were like, you know what? We didn't get to really showcase what it could do. Let's do it again and see if we can execute it better. I think Pittsburgh Knights honestly win game number one if adapting plays better. And that's really hard to say. That's something we don't often say. You know, we don't often find ourselves able to play singular blame on adapting on the team. But I think this time there were two or three times where he engaged and didn't have follow-up from the team and got blown up. And then from there, Dignitas is such a good team that you get one pick. That's it. That's over. They're going to wipe you if you try to fight them. And that's exactly what they did. They blew up adapting and then engaged on the rest of the team and just wiped the floor with them. And so if adapting, there's one particular fight where he blinks in and then immediately gets stopped and there's no right around Fire Giant, more towards Order side, I believe. But it was just a real head scratcher of why he chose to go in right there. There were a few moments where it worked a couple times, but I just felt like he was way over aggressive and just for whatever reason was trying to do too much without the team. And that's something that we wondered if Pittsburgh Knights would struggle with a little bit, right? Can they play as a unit? Will they have that synergy? Will they have the trust in one another? On paper, these are very strong players, but can they work together? So far, I don't think they have. Deathwalker has traditionally played in systems where the jungler has helped them out and been on the solo side of the map a lot of the time and set them up for plays and to do things. But I don't think adapting has done a very good job of that. You know, the games that they have won, I think they've either just overwhelmed their opponents or Deathwalker has been able to get that help and that pressure. It was funny to watch in the chat and on social media and everything of all of these people turning on Pittsburgh Knights. You know, they are the darlings of the casual fan. You know, on paper, they're the super team. How could they possibly lose? And now that they are finding these L's, people are, you know, turning on them a little bit. And it was funny, but it was also sad. You know, watching the play, I've been a Pittsburgh Knights hater since day one. That's no secret. I don't believe in them as a team, but I don't think it was Emilzy's fault. I don't think it was Zero's fault. I don't think it was Deathwalker's fault. Vote contributed. Adapting contributed. They all had their moments, but to single out, I think I saw a lot of hate for Emilzy in particular, and I don't think it was his fault in any way, shape, or form. I think he's played really well. And I don't know. It's good to see my prediction that Pittsburgh Knights would struggle come true, but, you know, you also want to see people stick with a team, and, you know, because they're so high profile and so divisive. They're going to get that hate. And yet, I just don't like to see that aspect of it, right? You know, kind of Weekend kind of gets the same thing. We'll kind of talk about that when we get to our second set of the day. But Dignitas played just amazing. I don't think there's another team who's playing the team fight aspect of Smite as well as them. They understand the game and are able to make things happen more than I think a Dignitas squad ever has before. Something about adding in Adapting and Hurrywind has really made a big difference. Now, that's not to say they played perfectly. There were several times throughout the day where Hurry forgot how to use relics. There was several times where he just didn't Aegis and it cost him his life. And, you know, stuff like that usually is when the Pittsburgh Knights roster would really capitalize. And they did game two. Game one probably should have, but again, Adapting kind of over-aggressed. And then after game two, they had the Jormungandr banned away. So I don't know if that was like their pinnacle strat. I don't know if they thought they could get away with it every game, but that got banned away, which was really cool to see that the Jormungandr mid got respect banned in like the first ban phase. And then from then on out, it was, you know, Dignitas just stretched the games out and made them long and tested the patience of the Pittsburgh Knights. I was talking to, you know, a coach friend of mine, a contemporary, who, you know, was like, you know, Dignitas played that perfectly against the Knights. The Knights are really impatient, and they just couldn't wait to make their moves, and it caused them to make mistakes. And then you couple that with, you know, them wiping against the Enhanced Fire Giant. And that's like another topic, right? The Enhanced Fire Giant, whether you love it or hate it. Sorry, my dog is going nuts right now. I think we're good now. But they made the Pittsburgh Knights kind of sit on their hands a little bit, made them antsy, and it paid off. But the Enhanced Fire Giant, whether you love it or hate it, I personally, I think it's the unpopular opinion right now, but I kind of like that the Enhanced Fire Giant is so hard, makes the in-game boss objective have weight to it, that it can kill you, that it is like you have to play around it in a smart way. I like that, and I think that's something that hasn't exactly been seen in the Smite scene in a while, like having an actual boss fight objective at the end of the game. Like we're used to, oh, we're all fully six slotted, let's just go kill the objective, whatever, woohoo. But now it's an actual feat to take it down. And we saw misplays around it from the Knights, and it cost them a game. Game number three definitely had, definitely should have been the Knights, but then they throw around Fire Giant and Dig win. Game number four, you could definitely tell that the Knights were rattled, they were tilted, and they couldn't come back. And that's kind of everybody who's ever had a shred of critical analysis of this Pittsburgh Knights roster has said, how will they do when they get tilted, when they get behind, when something bad happens in a set? Can they come back and recover from it? And they definitely did not today. That was a big point for me of like, hey, this is everything that's wrong with this Pittsburgh Knights roster. And I'm sure, you know, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes about it. But, you know, that's, you know, if I'm matching up, you know, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, when this roster was announced at the beginning of the season, and I'm collecting clips of everything that I've said I predict was going to happen, and whether or not, like, I'm finding stuff that proves what I'm saying or that proves the opposite. That moment, today's set, kind of goes directly hand in hand with how I was talking about them not being able to recover. They don't have a leader to, you know, kind of get rid of the tilt and everything. That being said, Amilzy has played very, very well. I think Amilzy might be, if it wasn't for Trix Tank, I think Amilzy might be one of the best supports in the world. I think he's definitely top two, top three, depending on how, who you ask in the day. But Amilzy's been playing nuts. I've loved to see it. But Trix Tank, I mean, watching the stuff today, he played out of his mind and has just really been on top of his game. I've loved to watch him play. But Dignitas is looking like the real deal. They haven't really stumbled, even with their mistakes. Like I said, Hurricane forgot how to use relics, and it cost him his life a couple times. But I don't know. Dig's doing well. They're playing the game very well, and the meta fits and suits them. And they played for the team. I've said it last show. Every time I can talk about Dig, I can say that they play the team game of Smite better than really anybody else right now. So I think, you know, when we look at the power rankings, Dignitas definitely looks at the very top, and they've earned that. But Pittsburgh Knights isn't counted out yet. This is still in phase one. You know, they've lost twice now to Dig. I think it's hard to say they looked better today than that first encounter, because they did struggle, and they 3-1 this time instead of a 3-2, right? I think Dig and PK 3-2'd last time around. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look. But I think Pittsburgh Knights, they still have a lot of room to grow. And I think their biggest thing right now is that they aren't playing as a team. They haven't quite figured all of that out. It's going to take some time for them to really grow into themselves. You've got Deathwalker and Vote, who come from Rival, and I think Rival's biggest strength was that on any given game, any given set, one guy would have a monster performance and somebody else could not have. You know, they could play average and be okay because somebody is going to pick up that slack, you know. But now you've got, you know, adapting, when adapting dies or you know, makes a mistake there, what do you do? Who's your guy? And you've got the tilt factor. I don't know. It's interesting to watch the game evolve and this team and what happens. I like that they're experimenting. I like that they went with the Yorm mid. I don't know if that's because, you know, they saw the Zaylia play it and the Roar play it, and they were like, well, we can do that and we can put it in mid. I don't know what led to that, but I like it. I like that they're pushing the meta, right? That's the biggest knock we have against teams like SSG. They don't make the meta. They just play what everybody else is playing and try to perfect that style, and it doesn't work. So the fact that Pittsburgh Knights are trying to do things differently and pull out these pocket strats to kind of figure out an identity for themselves, I like it. I want to see more of it, and I hope that we see, I honestly hope we see Jormungandr mid again, or maybe an evolution of that, right? It'll be really interesting to watch them going forward. But they just haven't clicked. They don't look like they're all on the same page. And as soon as they get over that hurdle, they figure that out, that they're a strong team. There's no way around that. And then on top of that, if you add them making their own meta and then making their own, you know, picks and their own pace, and everybody else has to follow them, that could be dangerous. That could be scary. I wouldn't want to play into that. That's not a scenario that I want to play into. If I'm having to play on the Knights turf with their picks and their strategies, that doesn't sound like a fun time at all. We'll see. I am less harsh on them now because they've taken their L's, they've taken it on the chin, and now they came back swinging, and they didn't try to force, you know, they made changes. They didn't try to keep doing the same thing. They made changes, and I like that. And I can't fault the team when they come out and they make the visible changes to what they're doing. on the other side of that, you know, dig, keep doing what you're doing. Don't mess with it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? They're able to adapt to whatever everybody else is doing and then kind of keep their own identity as well. Bend, don't break mentality. I think that's Dignitas has, you know, I've said it from day one. I think they have what it takes to go all the way. Our next set of the day, we're looking at Trifecta and E-United. You know, E-United get the 3-0 over Trifecta, but it wasn't as cut and dry, clear cut as that. Trifecta made this a very competitive set, and I was impressed with what I saw. I think Trifecta is a team where there's not a single guy. They don't have the guy to come in and clean up and do work and be their singular carry. It's just not how this team works and operates. Lazra is still really getting acquainted with mid. And when he's had moments where everything's kind of aligned for him. He played Ryjin last week and had a really great, solid game, and it looked great. And you got a glimpse of like what a Lazra mid firing at all cylinders could look like. But that's not there every game yet. Weaken, if he hits two more rat ults across the set, they might win that entire set. So there's a lot of stuff kind of up in the air. Ducky, when he's allowed to play, when he's even or ahead, he makes some of the best rotations and impactful rotations. I can't even, you know, think of another way to say it, but he enables them to team fight early, and it's they can play around that. So when all of these things kind of align and they can do what they want to do, they look scary. They look good. They look like they dominate the pace in the game and everything like that. But as soon as one person like doesn't fulfill their role, the entire team falls apart. And I feel like that's their biggest weakness right now, is that they are so reliant on one another that there's no room for error. They have to play a perfect set. They have to play a perfect game. Or they rely on the other team to make a mistake that puts them back in the game. And that happens, but the game of Smite is played. The winner is the one who made the least amount of mistakes, right? The winner is the guy who capitalized on the other mistake. It's not because if two teams just play and neither one of them make a mistake, that game just doesn't end a lot of the time. I mean, sure, you can outmaneuver, but you win because you capitalize on a mistake, not because you are the better team, right? So Trifecta has a lot of potential. We saw a lot of it today. It's just not all there yet. And I'm curious to see what their coach brings to the team table. I saw people saying that Kaiser, one day I'll learn how to say it, you know, but that he made a big difference between last week and this. And I don't think that's entirely true. I think a lot of the things that we saw last week are still there to this week, and I don't know how much their coach was there for the last week, but I don't know. I can see the future. I can see a vision of the future where Trifecta grow and evolve and become a good team. I think they can be right. I think they can be a better team than SSG this year if current version of SSG don't improve. And then I also see the path where they are bottom of the SPL, right? There's two different, very distinct paths for this team. I think everybody who looks at Trifecta and says GGEZ, you know, easy 3-0, has been paying attention. I think they are a dangerous team, and I think United saw that and learned that today. On the other side, I'll talk about United now for a little bit. I don't know what to feel about this United seed. I think they have potential to be really strong, but I think they are also kind of a team that isn't as an exaggerated form of Trifecta. I think Trifecta and United fundamentally are very similar in the fact that they rely on each other to play well. Kalos and Ice Ice come from that rival squad where any given day, one player could pop off and be their hard carry, right? So not Ice wasn't tasked as being the guy every game. Collins was never tasked with being the guy every game. And they weren't. But it worked, right? I'm not saying that neither of them are good players. They are both really good Smite professionals and are some of the best in the world. But they were allowed to be average professionals, average pros. And some days they were above average and they helped carry their teams. So you put them, you kind of remove that safety net, the blanket that they have had in the past with their old team. And now you put them with Vedium, who, you know, Vedium's not always your hard carry guy, right? You put them with Big Man Tings, who wasn't always the hard carry guy last year and is still fairly new to mid. It's the hardest carry on that team, the guy who's been there the most as like a pillar for everyone to play off is Benji. And especially right now with the way Smite favors solo laners, it's a bit ridiculous. And you can play around him. And I think that's kind of what sets them apart from Trifecta, is that you've got Ice who can be the guy. You've got Benji who can be the guy. You've got Vedium who could be the guy. If I had to tier it, you know, you've got Benji, you've got Ice, you've got Collis, Vedium, and then I think I put Big Man on the bottom just because the lack of competitive play at the highest level in that role. Big Man has had some great games. I think he had some really amazing games last year when he first took over as the mid laner for Mouse. But there still needs to be some growth this year. I think he needs some help being consistent. But they are going to struggle, I feel like, for a little while as they're still getting used to each other, that they don't have a guy who every game is their focal point, is their carry. That's not always a bad thing, right? You look at, you know, Dignitas, everyone's playing the team game. They're playing together. But you've still got Cuvo. You've still got Trix Tank. You've still got Variety, right? You've got all these guys who any given game can be their carry, their win condition. Trifecta and United are more when we all play well, we can win. If any one of us bends, instead of bending breaks, we're done. And that might be exaggerated this season because of the LAN play. It's hard to say. I'm just not sure. But I think Trifecta has shown that they are no slouch. They deserve to be in the SPL. Lasbra, I think, has a lot to learn in the mid role. He still has to work on his positioning and decision making. We saw some ill-timed ults and things like that. I think Ionic has done well, but again needs to work on some positioning. He masterfully did the invade strategy today. Stole away, I think, two speed buffs at the start of two different games. That's pretty amazing. But inevitably, Trifecta crumbled because one pillar, you know, buckled a little bit, right? And United was able to take advantage of that. But it was no small feat for EUnited to beat Trifecta. Yes, they get the victory. Yes, they get the set win. But it wasn't like it was the easiest thing in the world. It's a 3-0, sure, but every one of those games, Trifecta looked like they could have won it. And a couple of times should have won it. Like Trifecta has an inexperience problem where they have the right ideas, but then the execution isn't there, or they make just a bad decision as a team. I think it was game number 2 where Trifecta had a deicide, got a Phoenix, and then decided to try to end the game and didn't quite have the damage to confirm it, ended up losing off of that. But Trifecta only has up to go from here, and I'm really excited to watch them. I think they are not just a unanimously bottom team with no future or hope in the league. I think a lot of people pegged them as that, even after last week, right? It'll be interesting watching how they grow. I think they, if Lazbra can finally get just super comfortable in mid and be reliable in that role, they will be a dangerous team to contend with. I think there's a lot of talent on there. Ducky's looking really good. He's getting in his groove. Weekend's in a really good groove, but I mean, that's kind of always what Weekend does, right? When the meta favors really aggressive auto attack junglers and everything like that, when he can play the Sirkets and the Arachne and the Bakas and all of that stuff, he tends to do pretty well. Wowie has been sort of quiet. I'm sitting here talking about everybody else, and then I'm really trying to force myself to think about Wowie, and I can't really say anything positive or negative. And I think ultimately that's a negative. If I can't really think of anything that he's done so far or his major contributions to winning or losing, I think that's a big problem. I think I like Wowie. I think Wowie is a great ADC, but I think there's just some stuff. There's got to be maybe an effort to put the spotlight on him and try to play the game through him at some point, right? I mean, try something new, Trifecta. Maybe that'll work. But United looks like a strong team. I had them right there with SK, but now, you know, Trifecta comes in. Doesn't make it look easy for them. Maybe United didn't practice as much. Got other bigger games to worry about. You know, they do play the Pittsburgh. Well, no, they don't. That's Trifecta. I take it back. United might have just got ahead of themselves. I don't know. It's hard to say. Maybe an off day. I don't know. The competition right now in the SPL is, I think, the highest it's ever been. And it's really interesting to see any given game somebody could take the win. You know, we're not seeing a ton. Even when we see 3-0s, it's not always just stomps. I think more often than not, they're close games and they get broken open after one mistake or a bad team fight or something like that. That's become the norm. We used to just have complete and utter stomps, and I think we're moving away from that. And I think that speaks volumes to the talent and the growth of the SPL as a scene. Looking ahead tomorrow, we've got Splice and Dignitas and Trifecta Pittsburgh Knights. Divios is back on the team for Splice. So Splice Dignitas is probably our premier game tomorrow. I mean, for sure, this has the potential to be the premier game of the week, right? We have the world champions coming up with a reformed Dignitas. And can Dignitas keep their undefeated streak? As far as like undefeated set streak, right? I don't know. And then Trifecta Pittsburgh Knights should be, I mean, that's either a 3-1 or a 3-0 for Pittsburgh Knights, unless Trifecta come out with something super weird jank and Pittsburgh's not prepared. Don't get me wrong, Trifecta has the potential to take these games. You know, I'll start with the Trifecta set because I can talk the least about it, right? I think that the way the game's played right now, you can play that early game very well and set yourself up for victory. Trifecta plays the early game really well. That is one of the hallmarks of a weakened team, is that he gives your team +5 to early aggression across the board. Every time he's been on a team, that's kind of what they've been good at. It's what he facilitates, because he ganks solo lane. He has pressure on that side of the map and then kind of, you know, lets his duo lane do whatever they're doing and tries to help mid and solo the most. Pittsburgh Knights coming off the loss to Dig could be tilted. They've got a lot to prove. This is an angry Pittsburgh team that Trifecta is going to be going against, and that could go one or two ways. They can be blinded by the rage, or they can be so focused that they pick apart Trifecta with deadly surgeon like precision. I expect the Knights to win this game. I don't expect the Knights to lose, but I'm at the point where I wouldn't be surprised to see Trifecta take a game off. I think Trifecta can take a game off of the Knights. And I don't know that I would say the same for the only team that I wouldn't say I could see taking a game off of Dig or Pittsburgh or Rival is SSG right now. SSG has looked better. I'm still waiting to see how they come back from their break and whether or not they, I think they have a coach or don't have a coach. I don't know. But we'll see how they kind of recover and do what they're doing and can keep up their upward trend. But I don't know. I don't believe the hype yet. I don't think they're there. And so I think SSG is still like my bottom team because I don't really see them taking games off anybody at the top. But I could see Trifecta. I could see LG. I could see United. I could see SK. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But yeah, Trifecta could take a game off Pittsburgh. Don't think they will. I think it's Pittsburgh all the way. Splice Stigatoss is another thing, though. If Splice is as dominant as they were in their run through Worlds, this could be one of the greatest games of Smite ever, period. Full stop. Both of these teams play the team fight better than anyone. Aurore and Trix Tank are paragons of what supports should be right now. Cyclone versus Nate. I'm excited to watch that. Divios versus Variety and Hurry versus Maz. It'll also be interesting. These teams on paper should be very close, but I think I've got to give the edge to Dig simply because they've had practice. They've been down there together playing. They've beaten Rival. They've beaten Pittsburgh Knights twice. They've got a lot of momentum. Splice has played one set, lost to Rival, but they were playing with a sub. Solo played pretty well. As well as Divios? Probably not. But they still get 3-1. And so I think that might be telling of where they are in the pecking order. I would love to see Splice be the first ones to get a win over Dig. That'd be kind of, we're here. We're still here. We are the champs. But I don't know that I believe they will. I think they had Lightning in a bottle in their Worlds run. I think there's still a lot that can go wrong for Splice. When they stuck together, I will still say this. I think that moving from Moswell might have been a good decision. When he played at Worlds, he played a lot of Opwash and just hit 4. There was a lot of that. And so I didn't see Moswell be the difference maker on this team. And so when everybody making changes, you could have grabbed a better mid laner. But I was wrong with SK. They keep Zatman. They keep Belair. And they're playing lights out. Moswell could have surprised me. Show me that he's got a lot in the tank still. Same thing with Cyclone. Is Cyclone at Worlds quality? Or is he going to see a dip back to what the rest of the season kind of looked like? I don't know. Hard to say. Hard to tell. I think we're going to learn a lot from this set because I believe Splice will be playing with Divios, and so they will be at full strength playing against a full strength Dignitas team with a lot of momentum, and they're both playing the team fight. Dignitas is playing the team fight better than everyone, but that's kind of Splice's hallmark. I'm excited to see what Splice bring out as their starts, if they go for a more traditional start or they fully embrace, harassing the enemy jungler for 5 minutes and abusing the catch-up mechanic. I don't know. We're going to learn a lot. What does Splice have in the tank? Are they as good? Are they the world champions and bound for another run? Or are they the world champions and... are they another E-United? Win the world championship and then kind of fizzle out a little bit. I don't know. I have hesitations, reservations about what I think Splice can do. I think this is 3-2 for Dignitas. Maybe a 3-1. I don't think it's a 3-0. I think that would be ambitious to say. I think that'd be a discredit to Splice to say that they get 3-0'd by Dig here. But I definitely think Dig wins this set. And we see that Splice is a bit rusty, or they've got some work to do. I don't know. Maybe that's unpopular. I love Aurore and Divios and all of those, you know, guys, but I don't know. I'm excited to watch Kabam versus Biggie. See what they draft up. This set will 100% dictate what we see in some matches moving forward. All eyes should be on this set, and I'm really excited. I can't wait to watch it go down. All right, so that's it for, you know, our breakdown of the games. Oh, before I forget, let's take a look at the standings for the season so far. We're in week 5 out of 13, I believe. And so we have Dignitas 4-0, plus or minus of 8. Yeah, United with the 3-0. Rival to 2-1. Pittsburgh with the 2-2. SK with the 2-2. And Renegades, you know, have done nothing. Luminosity and Trifecta at the bottom, like everybody kind of thought. But I think you remove Splice, you remove Renegades. What are the bottom three? Space Station, Luminosity, Trifecta. Just like Uncle Dick told you guys. You know? But should be some interesting games coming up. I mean, so we have our week 5 matches, and looking even further ahead, we go to next week where we've got Rival Space Station. That should be a really good game to see where Space Station is, if they've improved. And then also next week we have United Space Station's got a doubleheader, and I think they could lose both sets. So we'll see if Space Station's made enough changes, or if they're just dead in the water, if the old guard needs to be put out to pasture. I know we'll learn a lot this next 2 weeks. That's it for me. Like I said at the start of the show, we've got our interview with Hindu Man. It's about an hour long, so get your popcorn, go to the bathroom, get a drink now, because you don't want to miss a second of that. Next week, I'll be back talking about everything. And we'll probably have a double interview episode, maybe, because we've got Neil and Emilzy coming up, and I don't want to sit on those too long, just because, you know, the longer we go out from talking to them, the less relevant some of the information gets. So I don't know how we'll handle that. I'll let you guys know. But that's it for me in this portion of the show. We're gonna throw it to the Hindu Man interview, and I hope you guys enjoy it. And I'll see you guys next week, Around the Battleground. Hello and welcome everybody to Around the Battleground. My name is LHS, and we've got a very special guest here today. We've got Mr. Graham Hinduman Hatfield, the leader of the casting corps for Skillshot Media. I think that's fair to say at this point, right? You're the head of the snake.
Sadly, yeah. I'm the head, the tail, the middle part of it.
Yeah. Accurate. The whole thing.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. It's really crazy, because I mean, when I first got into Smite and everything, it's a lot different of a landscape, it felt like, within broadcast, you know. Everybody was in the trenches still at that point. It really felt like you had started to like go out and be more of the managerial role, and I feel like that's a lot of where you are now. I mean, I think we probably see you the least on actual cast at this point, right?
I mean, when it comes to SPL, I'll get the same, if not more, than the other casters to an extent, but I don't do as much console in minor league is what you see.
Right.
I still do, obviously, I'm still involved in Esports Weekly and patch note shows and everything going on in the SPL with stuff going on behind the scenes too. But it also means that there's only so much of me where I have to do things on, generally on Mondays and Tuesdays, as there'll be meetings and other stuff like that, and like some content creation things. So my Mondays and Tuesdays kind of get swallowed up from being able to do console and minor league. But that's why we've got, you know, other casters too. So
yeah,
kind of balances out.
Absolutely. It's watching, it's kind of cool to see all the rest of the cast, and I feel like we've seen Finch take a lot onto his plate, and Aggro, I think, I don't know, Aggro has kind of come into his own really the last year solidly, and he had already kind of been forming into that, but this last year, I think, you would have been a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, been hard-pressed to really have anybody break out from the middle of the pack. I mean, you and F dot at the top, right? And then everybody else is kind of like, you know, who's next after that? And I think Aggro has really cemented himself as the next tier of cast, or even like breaking up into that, the top talent for Skillshot at this point. And I don't know, watching, are you like a proud father watching like all of the success and like the changes?
To be fair, like just watching all of them grow like as individuals over time has been good, because like end of the day, like casting, you've got to work as a team anyway, but recognizing talent and be able to like get them to the forefront and get them to do what they're good at, you know, and realize their potential is really, really good, I guess is the best way of putting it. Obviously, it's always weird because talent is also a job where like you're technically fighting with other people for the commentary position sometimes. Mm-hmm. And not in a nasty way, just in a competitive sort of like you want to be the best, you know, well, not necessarily the best, but you want to try and give you all and hope it's good enough sort of thing. So, you know, Ryan stepping up, and he was already stepping up anyway. It just took a lot more time for the community and the public to really notice that you could see the differences in people, because people do evolve over time, like with commentary and stuff like that, with more practice and training and reps and personal progress and things. Like, yeah, it all adds up. Because like all the casters have improved overall. I don't think anyone's really gone on a downtrend at all whatsoever. But then again, we're all human and we can have bad periods of time too.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, now that I'm like, if I'm like thinking about it like critically, do you think, you know, Adonis was like probably one of the bigger, like, I don't know, respected, loved, like he was like one of those guys that everybody kind of liked listening to and everything. But I feel like him and Aggro really kind of occupied the same space for a little bit.
Well, that's kind of, it's also to do with the fact that like they're very similar in terms of commentary styles. Mm-hmm. Like, there's only two base versions, which is like the guy that's going to hype up the players and get excited about them, and the one that's going to understand the meticulous details of it. But they do cross over quite a bit, and Kevin and Ryan both have the same sort of techniques towards that. Mm-hmm. A little bit more. Ryan's is a little bit more refined because he's been to broadcast school and stuff, but Kevin's was a little bit more endearing because it wasn't as polished. You know right. what I mean? Like there was ups and downs for everyone, and everyone's got their own little personal things that make people like them for the most part.
Right. So I don't know. It's like, do you think that because Kevin stepped away from the casting, everything that enabled everyone to really pick up on what Aggro was bringing to the table more, and like enable him to shine just that little bit extra? Like he was already doing well, like you said, but having Kevin, who wasn't there competing in the same little the slot, like he's like, oh, Aggro is great. Like everybody.
Yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of that, I guess, but at the same time, like Ryan and Kevin still work together anyway. Like finals season, mm-hmm. Jesus, season four, three. We did the 3-man cast with me, Ryan, and Kevin at that time. I mean, that was one of Kevin's last cast, actually. But yeah, I mean, they were already technically working together, you know, at a certain time. So it was definitely more of a being established and being around a long time. Being seasoned does help a little bit towards it, because it's not just you're seasoned, you've been around long enough, you deserve like the bigger games or like to be on broadcast more. It's not just about that, because it shouldn't be, you know. I don't give a shit about whether someone's been there 2 weeks or a year. If they're better than the other person, or they're going to bring better to the broadcast, then they'll get the spot, you know. So Ryan was already hitting spots the time that Kevin was around anyway, and yeah, they did like fit in the same zone. But the level of games, if you think about it in the grand scheme of things, like two semifinals means you need at least two chair two casters, you know, and you need at least two hype casters on each of those sets if you can make that happen. So there's still going to be a fair amount of, you know, shared work going on where you're not going to see too little of someone. But yeah, Ryan definitely is like a main staple of the broadcast now. He's more involved in patch notes and things, but that's all about, you know, getting people to grow and get better at the job and learn more and get chances to push themselves to the next level. And that's kind of what I'm there to do, you know, is I understand a lot of what goes into trying to make it happen and be in esports from someone that had no experience before. So I just try and teach the younger ones and put, you know, point them in the right direction, you know. But at the same time, it's still a lot of their own legwork. It's not really as much to do with me as people may think.
So I know this.
That's just me being humble.
Yeah. Like everybody owes the 100% of the success to Hindu. Everybody knows that, even if they won't say it. You know,
that's
it's
right.
It's just a fact of life.
Yep. I could fire them all at any moment. Yeah. That's what it would be. I don't know who I'd replace them with, but I could fire them. You know,
I hear we're due for another season of The Caster.
I had to do. There were so many applications for that show, and so much legwork that I put in behind the scenes for that. And the only good thing that came out of that, in my opinion, is like for the people that are selected, the show worked out well because we got a good balance and a good mix of different styles, variations, and ability level, as in base ability level as well, coming onto the show, which was really good. But also, we got some talent out of it that like went on to do different things. You know, like whether or not they're still with High Res or got picked up in the first place, like a lot of them did go into directions that they wanted to. It gave them, you know, something more. So yeah. It was cool.
I mean, like,
I don't know about a second one though. I'll tell you that.
Well, this would be a third technically, right?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Because the first one was me and DM.
Yeah.
And that was like, okay, that was one. But the second one was a little bit more organized to an extent. It was more organized, but it still had its issues with trying to make a TV show and make it over a short period of time and get all the people there to do it. Like, there's a lot of money that goes into something like that too. It's not like completely free, you know? So making that work was a lot of fun, but very stressful too, especially because, well, the biggest story was always Finch, because Finch wasn't even originally on the show. He was number 11 on the show, but someone pulled out the Friday before the filming on Monday, and we had to pull Finch in, and he went on to come third, and now he's a full-time Smite caster, so, you know.
What could have been? Like that's
how funny the world works,
yeah,
right?
Like, The Caster Season 2, like, always has, like, that special, like, place in, with me, because that's what I was around for. I was around for that whole filming, and, the kind of magic of meeting everybody and seeing everybody kind of rise up to that, and, all of those people, like, I still follow, like, it, whether they're High Res or not, you know. I know Ron Jobber's doing his own, he's got another clothing line coming out that he's doing, designing himself. Gabriella's crushing it with, like, I think she's with Cheddar now, and she's doing all this other stuff. Like, I see her doing random host stuff all the time.
She's a West Coast girl now. We lost her to the West Coast. God, sad time.
Damn West Coast. but I had a question. All right, so going back to your current casting team, I know as a father you can't answer this question, but do you have a favorite casting partner
overall? There's definitely people that you can lean towards wanting to cast with for certain games. And I think that's the difference, is like, it depends what kind of game I'm going to get into. If I know it's going to be a long, drawn-out game, and there's not going to be much to talk about analytical-wise because everyone's in position for the most point, and it's going to be a long one, there'll be people who are a little bit more fun. Like, I love casting with Tom for that, because me and Tom can shoot the shit and make it sound at least interesting when there's nothing going on, which is definitely helpful. But then if you want the analytical side, you know, you want the real numbers, you've got Toli. If you want the player feel, you've got a little bit more of Ryan. And then if you want, like, the ranked all-star feel, it's Taco. And there is a difference between the pro player version and the ranked all-star version, but they're close enough, and you know the differences are very nuanced to an extent.
I feel like
there is a benefit to casting with everyone, you know.
Everyone kind of brings their own strength.
And the one thing, if you put just two people together the whole time, it'll never get better. It'll just stagnate. And that's one thing that I don't think people realize. Like, it's cool to be a casting duo, but if you're just in a permanent casting duo the entire time, you end up just repeating the same phrases and getting into lulls of, like, self-confidence of knowing what the other person's going to say after you. And you don't think as hard or try as hard, which can make it kind of, you know, stagnate quite a bit, in my opinion. So it's good to have the different variations.
That was a masterful sidestep, I have to say.
that's one over time. To be fair, it's always one of those things, like, do you have a favorite? And I'm like, maybe I do in some senses, but at the same time, like, he just causes unnecessary drama for me going, yeah, I really love Kevin more than everybody else, you know. Like, there's no point in doing that, especially when what I'm saying is true as well. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of honesty to it. Like, you can stagnate by just casting with one person, and sometimes it's not always a good thing to just have the same two on, because nobody really learns from it.
Absolutely. And it's all about the growth thing, right? I think, you know, the lightning rod of hate, you have two people on the cast. A lot of people throw the most shade at. I mean, everybody gets shade thrown up at this point. I mean, everybody, you can't. The more the scene grows, the more we have just stupid cunts, like, being angry in chat. And, you know.
Sure.
But so I think Taco and Toli probably get the most. But, like, I've always loved Taco. Like, my favorite, when I was, you know, like my 2 week days on the desk, like, talking to Taco was great. Like, I loved, like, because we both had, like, that analytical bent to it, but the way that the ranked all-star version bringing it was always great. And I think she's kind of having her breakout season at the start of this year. I've really started to enjoy Taco's cast a lot more because I feel like she's kind of started to embrace, and I think as a whole, the casters have, like, the memeier side of it, but, like, steering into the curve. I think, and I've gotten in trouble because I've used this term the wrong way, the taking the piss, like, steering into it. Is that the right?
Like, taking the piss, yeah. Taking the piss can also be seen as a further negative. Like, you can be joking around, and taking the piss does mean joking around, but it also means you're being quite serious too. Like, it's a weird line to use, taking the piss, because it can go either way. So that's why, like, you may have got into that. But going back to your point, I mean, Taco and Tony will get the most flack because they're chair twos anyway, right? And chair twos are generally not as hype as chair ones because they're not there to try and be the super hyper people, but people expect them to be, right? And it's like, well, that's not exactly what they're there for. But also because people have a difference of opinion, and a lot of gaming is subjective to an extent of like, you know, I think this is good, you think this is good, you're fucking wrong because I won. That's what it really all comes down to, is like, who won. But even then, sometimes people can win with shit and you can still think it's wrong. Like me recently, I'm not happy with this assy first item build. I still think it's shitty, you know, like I'm not sold on it yet, but maybe I'll come around. I'll probably get blown up for it if it does, you know, become a main thing and I'm wrong, but, you know, just own it and move on. But Taco's been doing well for a while. It's just been hidden under the surface. Like I said, like the same thing with Ryan. I think she started, her real growth spurt was last year, and now people are starting to see it more this year, even though it's the same as what it was last year, but people are just noticing it. It happens over a slow period of time, and it just takes more, because the one thing that a lot of the people at home don't realize is that you'll see him on camera for maybe like once or twice, maybe once a day, right? Maybe twice a day, you'll see him on camera. But you won't watch every single broadcast ever. You will not see everything that goes on in the back. You know what I mean? Like, you may tune into the minor league for 2 weeks and then not watch minor league for 2 weeks and then be like, oh yeah, Taco's cast in the third week was terrible. But then you've not seen him in 6 weeks and you're still going off the opinion it's just terrible. And it's like, well, that's not accurate. You know, things can change quite drastically, and day to day, like, everyone has good games and bad games. I think every game I do is bad, so it's just the way it is. It's one of those hard things to try and keep grinding, you know, over and over again. And then taking shot, you know, community, like being upset with commentary, it's just something you gotta have a thick skin with, and Taco's done a really good job of like embracing that. It's not an easy thing to get used to, you know, just to have people shoot the shit at you and like complain about things which are either A, out of your control, or B, they don't really understand too well.
Right.
Sometimes they can be right, but it's also about trying to break down their criticism constructively. And most of the time, you don't get constructive criticism, so it's just more like, you're shit. It's like, neat. What is shit about me? I think the only piece of constructive feedback that I ever remember really properly getting from someone who said I was really shit was, I was like, what's the problem? He's like, I hate your accent. And I'm like, well, I'm stuck. You know, I can't really do anything about that issue there. My accent isn't really going to go away too much. Although it has, from living in this shithole of this country. I'm joking. The US is fine. It's just Georgia, you know?
Yeah.
It's tornado-y right now for some reason.
Yeah, you know, it's been fun. Like, seeing all of the tweets roll in from every Smite pro.
All the pros, I fell straight back to sleep. Like, the wife has already taught me that I don't have to worry about tornado warnings in Georgia for the most part, even if we get them. So unless she's panicking, I'm just sleeping. It was like 4 a.m. We had massive tornado warnings and a massive storm the other day. And all the pros were like, oh my gosh. I'm like, no, it's all right. It's Georgia.
I was born and kind of had like my youth in Arkansas, which is like smack dab in the middle of Tornado Alley. And I have personally been in 3 tornadoes. Like, that's just...
See, Melanie, my wife, seems to think that every time I think there's a tornado coming, I'm all scared. It's not. I just want to see one. I'm not scared of being involved in weather. I want to see a tornado. It's kind of stupid because I'll probably die for doing it, but I'm like, yeah.
No. Like, so they come in those categories, right? And, you know, the ones of the little baby, like, it's just
give
an aggravated windstorm, okay?
Give me a 5. I want to go see a 5. I'm not scared of it. Like, if I die to it, I'm an idiot, sure, but, like, it's
be
cool
to see
those of. Yeah, natural disasters. And are they a disaster, though?
A 5 absolutely would be. Like, that, there was like a few, like, last decade, there was that category 5 that, like, wiped an entire town off the face of the earth. Like, that's there was true. Nothing. So, yeah. All right, we're getting far away.
You've taken us everywhere so far.
So, well, We've done our focus on the casting, which is great. I think absolutely we need to hear more from that. Like, people benefit from hearing the just shooting the shit about that kind of stuff. But moving more towards the SPL, right?
Yeah, let's go.
Have you been enjoying this season so far as a whole? Is it meeting your, like, as far as like the gameplay and mechanics and like player growth and development? Has season six kind of been like, they're hitting where you thought they'd be? They're overperforming. They're underperforming as players and sets. Teams.
The sets are definitely living up to the expectation coming into the season. I think on paper, when everyone looks at the rosters, you would definitely see a big gap between like first and last, right? Between number 1 and 10. And maybe, I think my divide is kind of leaning like a 6-4 split right now, which will be like 6 fighting for the top 2 spots, say, and then the other 4 fighting who's going to be the bottom 2, you know? Mm-hmm. That's what I kind of expected at the start of the season. It's kind of going as expected, though, but it's a lot closer in that 6-4 split than I thought it would be. I thought the gap was going to be a lot bigger. But looking at how well, like, some of the bottom-end teams that everyone expected to maybe underperform or not do as well have really stepped up and shown more than expected to. So the games are living up to expectation, first of all. And the meta kind of didn't evolve much more past where it was last time, you know, in season 5. Mm-hmm. So season 6 was like, okay, now it's a more established league, and it's been great to see so far. I'm excited to see, you know, what happens as the season progresses now about what kind of metas we get, because I can really see quite a few metas on the table right now that are being messed with, and nobody really knows which one the right direction is at the moment, which is, you know, what every season is all about.
Has there been any strategy or style or anything so far that has excited you the most from these teams?
Do you know what? I think it was the lane swaps from LG is the one thing that got me the most hyped. Like, so far, we're seeing the Hunter go to the solo lane and the solo laner go to the duo lane at the start and then switching it back again. I think there's a lot of room to play with stuff like that if they can make it work and find the right reasons to do so. The only thing is that I know LG were doing that based off of the previous patch because they've been scrimming and practicing from the previous patch, but the new patch hit. And that changed things that happened in level 2 in the duo lane with the ghost minion, which means that their strategy was designed for the other meta and not the current one. So I'm not sure how much more we'll see of it, but I think they had the right idea.
I couldn't agree more. Like, watching the LG come out in those games was amazing. There was that, and then before that, I think for me was Pittsburgh Knight set against Rival. And they had Deathwalker on Bologna, who just for like 2.5 minutes ran around the map, clearing up farm, doing back camps. And they had a Milzy on Neja in solo lane, getting up farm. And they abused that catch-up mechanic. And within like a couple minutes, Deathwalker was ahead of level than a Milzy. And I was like, yes, that is like peak 100% Smite. You are playing the game at 100% efficiency at that point. And that's something that I, as like as a coach, as an analyst, as just a fan of the game, I've wanted to see, and I have been like trying to preach at lower levels, hey, let's just try stuff. Because like, you look at League of Legends and they do crazy top lane, bottom lane swaps and all this crazy stuff all the time. And Smite has like, so I think like Smite has historically gotten those ruts where you look at season 3, the game was played the same meta for several months. And then Worlds comes in, Ear changes the meta completely, and that meta is what wins Worlds. Splice do the same thing. Go ahead.
The one thing that's like changed, the one thing with Smite that's a little bit different is the fact that the competitive like pro level meta is tried to be pushed down to the casuals, and it's not the pros trying to push it down. It's just the casuals are trying to pick that up. So when I say casual base, I mean every other player who's not playing in the pro league. So the ranked games, for example, like people are trying to pick the same stuff they're seeing in competitive games, but not having the same success. So sometimes you're starting to see gods now on like websites like smite.gg and Smite Go, where you see the win-loss ratios of gods, and you'll see it like, hey, why are they picking Ganesh in the pro league, right? When in the game, he's at like a 49% win ratio or something, mm-hmm. You know? That's starting to happen more and more now where people are trying to copy pro player strats, but they don't work as well in the casual games. And I'm kind of excited to see the divide finally happen where we get a ranked and casual meta, but the pro meta is a little bit different, you know? It shows more of an evolution, and it needs to be that divide. Like, League of Legends has had that for a while on and off of like, there will be characters selected, you know, in their game where It's run in Pro League 2 in the similar sort of vein, but then there's also strategies that just won't work. Like Fafnir, for example, is fantastic in competitive play because your whole team's on comms and they're using Fafnir to the best of his ability, whereas in your casual games, it doesn't work out the same way.
Right.
So the divide in meta is going to be something really interesting that I'm looking forward to potentially this year as the season progresses. We'll see. It probably won't, though, because people just get... If a pro's not doing it, everyone's scared to do something different, you know?
Absolutely. But I think it's funny, because we're seeing some of these scrappier teams at you know, the quote-unquote bottom teams. LG comes to mind. Like, they're willing, like, hey, we know we've got a chip on our shoulders. We're behind the eight ball. We got to try something to get ahead. And, you know, they take a game off a dig, which I don't think anybody could have possibly, like, foresaw. And, like, sometimes it works. Like, that's, I think we're seeing like a top end meta and a bottom end meta. I think it's weird. We're going to see a divide in the SPL about like what the meta works. And
well, what you'll always see with the top end teams is that they're going to be being creative for one, first of all. But second of all, they're not going to break things that aren't broken. So if they're strong in a certain area, such as like team fights or something, they will play to that strength, you know? Whereas teams like LG, who are the ones expected to do very badly all year and struggle a lot, they're going to be really creative and try and pull things out that may not work, you know what I mean? Or may not have worked in the past, or do strategies that haven't been seen before. They're there to try and throw wrenches in the works of the upper teams of like, this is what they want to do. Can we mess that up in some way? And that's what's exciting to see, of like how teams can maybe work out teams. We may see a development happen over time where you're like, well, they don't do too well against the bottom end teams because they're, you know, overly crazy and flamboyant and Dig just want to do their thing, you know? I don't think it'll be Dig specifically that's going to be an issue like that. More like Knights, I'm expecting, as the season potentially progresses. Yeah. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
So, you know, obviously besides LG, is there anything... what's been your favorite moment so far, or anything that took you by surprise that you really liked?
I was surprised by Yorm actually yesterday. I mean, it only just happened, but Splice used Yorm and Gunder for the first time, and I've not been a big fan of him, but Aurore was piling him very well and showed the strategy you can do with him. I was a bit surprised to see him get in competitive play so quick, but then again, the ultimate is bullshit, so
I mean, we saw Zalia play it every single time he could.
He did, actually. Yeah, yeah. I forgot about that.
It was a weird...
I was thinking more in the support role, though. That's why I'm more surprised. Seeing it in support, because it is a Guardian, sure, but it's not your sort of defensive Guardian. But then again, Aurore's not really much of a defensive Guardian player anyway. Like, he can play them, but he'd definitely rather lean on the Fenrirs and the Najars and the crazy outlandish picks. So Yorm definitely fits that wheelhouse of being aggro as hell and causing problems.
I feel like Yorm has that sneaky laning phase. Every time I'm against Yorm, I'm like, oh, I'm slapping those cheeks. And then all of a sudden, I'm dead. And I'm like, where? Wait. Like, level 2, he's got the breath and all of that. And I'm like, but how is he? I don't understand.
His laning phase is really strong. Like, his laning phase is really, really good. It's after that he starts to struggle because he's not a peel support, you know? He's an aggro support. Mm-hmm. He's there in your face. Think of it as a Kabrakan-esque with lack of CC. He's literally going to sit in your face and cause you problems and try and force you out. And Aurore did that pretty well. Other things that happened, I'm trying to think if there's anything that was like, wow, really? I'm still waiting to see the Renegades play, just like you all. Hopefully that'll be sooner rather than later. Biggest thing, obviously, has been the visa problems, but that's just life, unfortunately. It happens. Visas are an issue, and it's out of a lot of people's control, which is very frustrating. But it should be all sorted very soon. Touch wood, cross fingers, all that bullshit.
I think I speak for everybody. That's a roster, I think, more than anything, that people are just like, I just want to see what happens. What do they do? That is a roster that's going to do some weird stuff.
Like, well, that's the thing. Like, I interviewed some of those guys. I've got C-Tricks and Funballer. Tricks and Funballer. Why the fuck am I saying Funballer and Rafa. It's Tricks and Funballer just because, you know, the old teams. Yeah. I'm just like, yep, Tricks, Funballer. That's what it was. No, it's not. It's Funballer, Rafa. So I got to speak to those guys, and they're like, they seem excited. Rafa's pretty confident, you know, like he's got the right team for this year. And Opinions of Pro seems to be 50-50 too, or like leading a little bit. The EU guys definitely feel Renegades have a good roster here. I think the rest of the world is kind of looking at like, well, you potentially do, but how are you going to function, you know? So I think there could be a coin toss still of how well they'll do this year. But with the pros all leaning the way of Renegades, they might be, you know, closetly underlooked. I think one or two of the players do stand out, though, which everyone's aware of. And I think that's where I'm a bit concerned from that by point of view of, like, people recognize the star players on that team. But I don't think it'll be enough on their own, even if they do play to their potential that everyone's expecting, you know? Okay. It should be a fun roster to see, though. I think they could be along the lines of SK game.
SK, I've been pleasantly surprised at SK. I will be the first to admit, I was kind of a hater onto SK. Yeah, they had a lot of success, but I felt like when I heard they weren't making any changes, I was like, ooh, really? Because, like, Zap is, like, a polarizing figure, but I always felt like he was the old guard. I felt like you maybe step aside for your wowies of the world, right? And then
sure. But maybe, why would you change a roster that beat the former world champions at Worlds? Like, that's the outlook you got to have, right? They went into a set against EU United after EU United had won Season 5. And they got them in, like, the quarterfinals, right? Yeah. And everyone's already written them off, and then they come out and 3-0 them.
Yeah.
Like, that says a lot about that team already. Get to the semi, and then you're like, okay, yeah, this is an actual roster, you know? Like, this just needed time to grow. If you think about it, they only had Sam for soccer, I believe, from, like, mid-season, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't an established roster. It was a roster that was in the works and, like, was on the come up, so to speak. So I understand them not trying to change anything. But you're right. Like, on paper, if you look at the rest of the league and you look at that roster, you're not expecting miracles, but you are expecting good performances because of them sticking together where a lot of teams had changed. Yeah. And I think we had the kind of opposite of that, where I think they played up in games where I expected them to struggle and played down in games where I expected them to do better because they're established. So, They're in a weird position right now. We'll see.
I feel,
but it's also really early season, and like, we've only seen, like, maximum 3 games at the moment, I think, from any team. But all the teams are still getting themselves settled in for the most part. You know, like, if you move to a brand new house or something, if anyone's moved, you'll know this yourself. You don't move in a week. You know what I mean? You'll have a place to live that week, but you've not moved in, you're not settled down, you've not got your cozy comforts around you, and also you're living with people you probably never lived with before too, so you're having to deal with farters and snorers and messy people, you know, like, there's so many stupid things that go into it. So the longer, a few more weeks, and we'll see, I think by midway through the season we can start talking about, like, who's top and bottom, you know. But I think the early days have so many shakeups that it's really hard to tell, and it's even making me struggle too, because I've called most of the games right now. I think I've been off, like, by one so far, and I can't remember what it was. I think it was a space station set, probably.
Ah, you didn't miss anything then.
No, I said, I, like, not, oh, missed, you not called, missed, oh, yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah, like, caught it wrong,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
I
think, yeah, yeah.
I called it for SSG, and they lost, and I'm like, well, okay, that's just the way
it is. I think right now it's really interesting. I think we have, like, 3 different categorizations of teams. I think we have your tip-top, that, you know, is your Dignitas, is your Pittsburgh Knights, and is your Rival. And I think those are the top 3 teams. And I would put it Dignitas, Rival, Pittsburgh. And then you've got your your mid-table, which is, you're going to be your SK, your E-United. And that's it right now so far from what I've seen. And then you've got your bottom 3, which is SG, Trifecta, and LG. Like, I can't say anything about Splice. I think they are.
Where's Splice now then? Because that's
because we didn't see Divios. Solo Troll did admirably, but he's not Divios. So we haven't seen Divios play, and then obviously Renegades haven't played. But, you know, SSG is just, I don't know. Do you agree with me? I this is a very controversial opinion. Do you think they're a bottom 3 team?
SSG is a team, right, that's not, like, here's the thing, because I was working this out with the SSG guy, not with them, but, like, about Barra, Jeff, Andy, yeah? Now, Barra, Jeff compositions of teams that they've had over the years, when was the last time they set the meta? They don't set the
meta. Yeah, they don't.
Right? And that, I think that's the one thing that a lot of people are overlooking, is that, like, Space Station, like, Barra and Jeff have never been on a team that have been meta setters. They just play the meta. They learn the meta, and they learn to play the meta very well. And then by the end of the year, they always get good enough. You know what I mean? And that's not, like, a shot at them. It's just their play style. Like, there's teams that we've seen previously, like the Pantheras or the Epsilons or the Energies of the world, right? They'll set a meta. The first World Championships was the meta being played out by that cognitive team, right? Which is what Barra and Jeff won their first Worlds with, and Andy. But since then, they don't really set the meta pace. They normally, like, work out the meta and then play it. And once they're down with playing the meta and understand it, that's where they start to shine. But the problem is at the start of the season, there is no meta. No meta has been designed yet. So everyone came in with different things in the first couple of weeks. And Space Station went, okay, we think this is the meta. And they were wrong. And then they lose. And everyone's like, oh my God, these guys are shit. I'm like, no, they just didn't know the meta. They don't create the meta that's going to make other people play that way, you know?
Right.
So I think that's where they've struggled a bit. They're also still struggling. You can see that in the last set where they're still struggling with windows where they don't know what they should be doing. Like, there's just certain lulls in the action where they kind of get a little bit lost at the moment of like what the next game plan is, of what they should be doing in certain situations. And I think that's just someone, I don't know, someone just needs to take them by the scruff of the neck and be like, okay, you need to go do Gold Fury now, or you got to do Fire Jack.
Right.
You could be doing Tier 2s. Like, we've got to work out where that next level is for them. But I don't think Space Station Gaming have really underperformed, so to speak. I think they're a slow burn. It feels like they're in second gear and they're trying to get into third, you know?
Yeah.
But the problem is there's another car in front of them, so.
Right. I mean, none of what you're saying is really wrong. And, you know, I don't know, SSG, I will say, I've been really hard on SSG so far. And then this last set, you know, say what you will about their competition, who they're playing against, but they still kind of struggled. Every game that Jeff played well in, they won. And I think that was telling. Like, even the last game that they won, Andy didn't particularly look amazing. He kind of struggled.
And he had up and down games in that set. I remember him saying it himself afterwards, where he wasn't too happy with some of his plays in that. But yeah, Jeff had a very solid set. Supports are quite important. And they always have been, but always flown under the radar, you know? Like, they've always been the one that don't get the killing blows and stuff, but the amount of setup and peel and the amount of stuff they have to go through as a support player, because most of the time they're always involved in shot calling in some form as well, as a support, because you're the one that sees most of the map. So it does, you do have to support a lot of different areas and not just like in game. But yeah, Jeff had some great games and that's really important. But to be fair, there's always one player that shines in any team. You know, you'll get off a set and there's always someone that you go, yeah, that guy had a good game, you know? But most of the time it is a team game. And it sounds like a cop-out answer, but it's true. You know, like,
especially this year.
It does take five players.
The LAN setting, I think. I forget, it might have been you. I forget who called it on the cast, but it was, you know, we're at a point where the quality of players in Smite is such that if you do make a mistake, and especially on LAN, you're going to get punished for it. No matter if you're playing a top team or a bottom team. That's just like the progression of the league so far.
Smite in general, though, like on a very base level, you win a game of Smite based off enemy team mistakes, not your own plays.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the odds of you making a play that's going to be so impactful that wins you the game, sure, you can get a 5-man Kukulkan ult right on defense and win the game because respawn times are too long. That's accurate. But in the grand scheme of things, it's the team that makes the biggest mistakes that will get punished. And it's how big the punishments are from the pro teams is what the difference level is, really. So both teams will make small mistakes, but when they make those mistakes, how heavily are they getting punished after the fact? And some teams are really good at exploiting that and timing it well. But it really is who makes the most mistakes, not who makes the biggest plays. Because most of the time, making plays ends up getting you fucked. Like, yeah, sure, you're blinking and get a kill, but what happens after that?
Yeah, if it works, you're great. If it doesn't work, you're exactly. Benny Q with Blink Chiron.
Yep. I think there's a difference between a pro player and Benny Q with Blink Chiron, but, you know, we'll take that. That's fine.
Oh, God. Good times in the Smite community. Oh, boy.
It is. Yeah, I mean, the Pro League right now, like, is positioned to be really strong. And I'm more excited about the second round when we get to see everybody settle down. Because obviously everyone plays each other in phase one, they'll play again in phase two. And so I look at phase one as, like, everybody's settling in. Everybody's trying to find out what the meta is of season six, with the changes to, like, the Furies and the way gold's gained and the way experience is in the enemy jungle, you know, that sort of thing. So I was going to work all that out first. Then there's the totem of Ku, which could add something. We've seen some plays around that too. So everyone's going to learn all that through the first phase, settle into their new place, settle into their new teams for the most part. And then the second half of the season is where everyone's like, okay, Worlds is around the corner and we've got to buckle up, you know, we've got to drive it home now. So second half of the season will be even better than the first. The first is really just like an establishing shot, so to speak,
right,
of what's going on.
It's the baseline. Really cool. You're seeing what everybody kind of potentially has in the tank. And, you know, the last 2-3 years we've had, like, all of a sudden, like, the latter part of the year is where the team that wins Worlds generally starts to heat up, right? That's like, and it's not always the clear-cut winner. It's not the guy who's, like, in first the whole time. It's, there's something magical about, like, there's a run, right? And I think
Looking at it this way, I mean, Splice last year were first half of the year, they were in last place in North America, and then they won Worlds, right? So there's definitely things that can change from one half of the year to the next, that's for sure. But it does make an impact because, like, both these phases, phase one and phase two, do add to a total score system in terms of, like, placements for Worlds and things. So it does have an effect, which is quite important. And then there's still mid-season invitationals and things, so yeah. We'll see what happens.
Speaking of mid-season invitationals, this will be the last little thing we talk about before I let you go. Is okay. With... Oh my god, my dog. Is SML and console. I think it was put out that at mid-season invitationals or LANs, they're gonna the potential for the console teams to play the minor league, right? Isn't that?
Yeah, that is for mid-season. Yeah.
What
do you want to know?
I don't know. I'm just like, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think?
I think it's good. Like, I think we're almost at the point where we should just have one league. Like, that's where I'm at. I don't know if there really needs to be a separation. There's a chance that people will say, like, keyboard's definitely better than controller, but I know for a fact that there's players that play on controller that are better than some PC players. That's guaranteed. Like, the casual queues you've been in nowadays, there's a feel of, like, oh, console's better than PC. Oh, sorry, PC's better than console, but in the average game, it's not true. At the highest level, there may be some differences, but I think it'd be cool to see. You know, like, let them have the shot and show that they can play with the big boys. It's a shot for everybody, really. Mm-hmm. It's a shot for the PC players to go, no, PC master race. But it's also a shot for the console to go, you're wrong and you're fucking idiots. You know, right. Like, I'm excited for it to see how it works out. And there's a good chance we may find out that some of these console teams are way better than PC teams, but we've never had the chance to see it.
I can say that I've personally seen some scrims. I can't really say too much, but I saw some scrims between SML and console, and I'm really excited to see console play SML. I'll tell you after the show.
No, tell me now. Fuck you. You can't make me give answers, and you can't give them to on your own show. That's fucked up. You can't do that.
Console lost every game, but
okay.
But to be fair,
I was expecting you to say that because I was expecting you to say console won every game, and I'm like, well, it's scrims. Like, scrims, just so you know, whenever a player tells you they won in scrims or lost in scrims, it don't mean shit.
No.
The amount of teams that I've had say they've won every scrim and lost when it came to the game is insane. The amount of teams that said they've been losing every game and then after the game they've won, like after the actual real set they've won, is way higher. If a team comes to me and says they've been losing scrims recently, I actually believe they will win the game more because of that. Because that's why I'm just noticing the scene. So scrims are only one thing. Also, it's not the opposition you're going to play. Like, scrims are practice warm-ups to try and take on a team. But we're not at that level where, hey, Splice help the Renegades and go, hey, Renegades, can we scrim you, but can you all play like Knights for us, please, and pick the same gods the Knights will? Like, we don't do that. You know, it's very difficult to go, can you play like Adaptim, please? You know, so I know. And they've got two different play styles. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not possible. But yeah, it should be fun. It should be fun to see minor league and console take each other on and also get a shot maybe at the SPL guys too. I'm excited. We'll see how it goes. You know, I just hope it's not super one-sided. I hope it's closer. But at the same time, everyone, you know, you don't get to, if you don't try this stuff out, it's never going to happen.
All right. Do you think that this is the most competitive Smite's ever been?
It's not gone down. Let's just put it that way. I don't think the competition has gone down with this change so far. It's hard for me to ever, because I've been around since day one, and like there has been competitive moments in every single year, some more than others, and some that lasted a lot longer than others in terms of competition. When you say competitive, though, it's more like, is it because there's so many teams in the running that you is the reason competitive is coming up for you? Or is it like watching, because the difference is like Energy won two world championships. Does that mean it was a competitive season because the same team won twice? You know what I mean? Like, are they less competitive? Did we see best of five still happen?
I think season three was really competitive because there was, like, even though, you know, Energy went on their like huge run and like they were so dominant. The year before, I wouldn't have said it was very competitive because they literally just manhandled everybody. And then, but season three, like, there was the chink in the armor. That's where they first, like, obey with a little change to maybe some Sylvanas play, just a little tweak. they might win Worlds. That's like a huge. So I season three always has a place, especially away from my heart. But I think
I do think the season now is like it's pretty strong now. Like I think it's in a very competitive place overall. It just depends where the meta goes, man. Because like we could end up in a tank meta, a healing meta, a burst meta. Like they're all technically viable. I actually think they're all rock paper scissoring quite well right now. It might be a little bit of a lean to a healing meta that I'm worried about, but that's just me personally, because I can just see them coming from like 6 months away.
We're starting to see the Guan Yu slowly creep in.
He's been around, but I think healers are in an interesting spot until people really work out Cursed Ankh properly. Like, but I think there's a lot of innate healing in the game right now.
We saw a really hype Cursed Ankh come out the other day. I forget who had it, but then like I heard, oh, they had Cursed Ankh and they just killed themselves because they healed. And I was like, whoever did that, I forget who it was, but I was like, that's, you know, 400 IQ plays.
Cursed Ankh is probably one of the best relics in the game right now.
Yeah.
That and Shell. Shell is getting, not Shell, Phantom is getting, Phantom's still overlooked.
Phantom has a Shell effect on it. And I need everyone who's watching this to know that.
Phantom has the old Shell effect on it. Like, that's how strong old Shell was if you upgrade it. So that's really potent. Upgraded Cursed Ankh is really good. I don't know why I got into relics, but yeah, relics are fucking strong. It's because of healers. But yeah, I think the tanky situation is like people talk about tank meta. I'm not too worried because there's plenty of pen in the game right now.
People talk about tank meta. Genetics talks about tank meta.
I mean, you will because you'll see more tanks now and again, and then you'll see burstier comps, but then you see double hunter comps, and double hunter comps generally destroy tank comps, you know, for the most part. So it's always swings and roundabouts. I think the meta is in an interesting spot. It just depends where we go to next and how much of a difference Set and Horus make too, like whether they're going to make an impact as well when they finally hit the league. Because we've only just got Merlin, Jormungandr, and like Arthur that are just slowly working their way into competitive properly, with Jormungandr's first week or two being available, same for Merlin. And now we're going to add Set and Horus to the mix eventually. And then that's two gods on release, you know?
Horus.
So when they're for SPL, it's like, well, do they both get banned? Does one of them get banned over the other? Does Merlin and Arthur get through now because of that? So every new god always changes things, you know? Yeah. It can always have the potential to change the meta massively based off what's first pick priority and second pick priority.
As a support main, how excited are you for Horus?
I wasn't as sold on him as I'm starting to get sold on him now, I guess is the best way. Because at first I wasn't so happy. I was like, I don't know. We'll see. Because I don't know what it was. There was something about his kit that personally with me, I was like, I don't know. But now it seems to be like, maybe I was wrong. So yeah. I'm excited because I do want more supportive gods. And it's been a while since we've had a true support. And having a warrior that is a true support with some of these abilities, like, it's going to be nice. I'll tell you that. To be able to go physical when people are picking Alkong and Freya on your team, and you're like, God, I don't want to add more magical to this, you know? So being able to pick a physical is going to be useful. Yeah. And also you get to fuck around with some different builds, too. Because one thing about playing, you know, support most of the time is you're stuck in a Guardian, which means you don't get to play with some of the items like Ancile and shit, unless you're playing Assassins. So being able to do that as a support player is kind of fun.
This was another pawn design, right? Horus was, I believe.
I think so. I get confused because, like, I just know them as a pack of designers these days. Like, it's Pawn, Clumsy, and AJ, like, all working away as a team. So I just see the end result, and now and again, I work out who it was. I think it was.
Yeah, I'm really
was, like lead.
I'm really excited because we saw I was at E3 with Pawn when Baron dropped, and I was like, he was talking to me about all the stuff before it, like the patch notes went live and everything. You know, he was like, you know, we've got a mage, but. He's like a solo laner or a support. And I was like, Pawn, you're crazy. I don't know what you're talking about.
Or everything.
Yeah. That's
and the only good news is that came out of Baron is that when we did a playtest against the Baron, I managed to get Guan Yu nerfed, which was very exciting for me. So do you remember when Guan Yu went crazy for a little while? He was jungling and stuff, and like he was just really potent. I can't remember what we did to him. Did we double his healing or something stupid like that? We did something
his stacks
him.
Or something, and
he was really strong. And like design were like, no, he doesn't need a nerf. So I got in a playtest, and we had to play against Baron. They made me D level in a playtest as a jungler. I'm not a jungler, but I jungled Guan Yu, and I was like six levels up. They made me D level in the game to make it balanced, but I was dicking on. I was dicking on the Baron, whose ultimate was longer at that time than Guan Yu ult. His ult, and he moved as far. He moved quicker than he currently does in that ult. Too,
oh my god!
And I still beat him, and I was very proud of that. I'm like, yeah, got Guan Yu nerfed, but Baron was still OP. But I still got Guan Yu nerfed. That's the only thing I remember.
I don't know. The biggest thing for me is just watching, because again, I think
I think a lot of people either don't know or forget, like, you came into Smite through League of Legends, right?
I mean, technically, yeah. It was, I've been doing League of Legends, being MOBA boy, and League of Legends there. And then my friend started playing Smite again, like, messing around with it when it was getting towards launch. So I started to get involved. It was a Christmas period, so you know when everyone's just kind of quiet and all your friends are off, so you end up just fucking around in different games. We did that, and then we jumped into Smite, and I was really hesitant because I'm like, I don't want to play another MOBA, man. Like, League of Legends is a MOBA. You know you can't have more than MOBA on the go because terminology and making sure you understand everything that's going on because there's so many characters and things like that. So I was like, I don't know about this, but I really enjoyed it, and then realized there wasn't really much of a pro scene of EU commentators or anything like that. So I was like, huh, I could go do this. So I did. So yeah, I've been around since like around launch tournament is when I first started getting into the game. So I've been around for pretty much every meta of proper seasons.
Right.
And seen all the different change-ups, yeah.
And I came through Smite through Dota. So like very different mindsets. You know, Dota's whole thing is like, if everybody's broken, nobody's broken.
Mm-hmm.
And just the different like crazy things they'll try. And so I feel like seeing some of the in League, like you can have a mage building attack speed, physical damage and everything like that, and like I think that's something that Smite has needed in a sense. And so like having a warrior support is really cool to me. Having a guardian mage or solo mage like that is really interesting.
And it's right, it is interesting to have those. I think the biggest issue has always been, though, is that MOBA is a very complex beast of a game for a new player to come into. Like, if you've not played a MOBA before and you're like, okay, so what you're looking to do is get experience, kill their opposition to kill their base. But to do that, you need to get gold. And to get gold, you need to farm for experience to get the gold, to buy the items. Then you need to look at your items. Not only that, by the way, when you're farming and leveling up, make sure you're leveling your abilities in this order. Because if you don't level them in this order, you're not going to do max potential of damage. Also, be careful about playing this god into this god. Because if you do that, like, think about all the shit that goes into a MOBA, right? So stepping that up from a base level, it's always tricky to get to MOBA anyway. And the one issue that's always there is that people want to be able to play like a mage in the support role, sure, but how difficult is it for a new player to understand that, you know? Like, you having classes does help in the sense of like, hey, I'm playing support, I'll play a guardian. But it is nice to see that we kind of open it up where you're like, hey, don't worry about it, you can kind of play whatever god you want in any role to an extent, right? But it's not going to be like competitively viable with some of them. But there's definitely more flexibility, and some of the masks help with that in the previous season.
Lodos mask. Lodos mask, before it got the changes, literally made any god a support, and that was the happiest I've ever been.
But that was the first time the eyes of the community, so to speak, and the pros opened up to the potential of using them. And if you notice now, we've seen a variation of supports and different characters in different roles based off that, even though those masks aren't being used as much. Like, it still had the knock-on effect, you know. Sometimes I've seen the design like have to buff something to try and give it some recognition, and then get complaints about it being buffed from people where you're like, well, it's been over powered forever, we just tried to make you aware that this item exists and it's really strong as shit, you know, like, hey, we'd like to nerf this item, could you pick it so we have a relevant reason to nerf it before the community complain about it being nerfed when no one was buying it anyway,
right?
So
yeah, I think hands down there's so many moving parts between the game, design, esports, like trying to keep the casual people happy, but also the high level people, and then pros, like pros and ranked all stars, and then casual. It's a very, it's a very hard line to walk. And, you know, I think so far this year, I've been pleasantly surprised, and I've been shouting from the rooftops that how good this season has been. As far as broadcast has been great, and then actual game design, I've loved the direction too.
There's still always going to be hiccups though, and the thing is, everyone remembers a hiccup, you know, and whether you think it's a hiccup or more than a hiccup, what the fuck ever, but like, issues are always going to happen, and they're never going to go away. The only thing is, everyone always remembers the negatives and never the positives. So it's always the situation. People remember the Saw set that I casted from years ago that lasted 3 minutes more than they remember who won the semifinals at Worlds last year. You know what I mean? Like, that's crazy. People remember negatives way more. They remember the times where things were OP and not when things were, you know, good. So,
I turned into a League of Legends broadcast for the first time in like over a year, and they went into the game and the client crashed and they had to vamp for like several minutes. And I was like, and people, but nobody was like complaining about it. And I was like, huh.
No, typical high res. That's what yeah. should have been. You know? I'm great. Used to it. It's part of the job. Like, all it's right. okay.
Yeah. All right. So I think I've got asked you as many questions as I think I could.
You
I think
did. You stole even more time for me, but
I
that's okay.
I did. Okay. Is there anything that I haven't asked you? You kind of want to. Anything you want to say that I haven't asked you about?
No, not that I could think.
Any questions for me? I think like that's an important thing. It's a two-way street.
Oh, God, I'm in the spot. If you would have asked me that like 20 minutes ago and give me 2 minutes to think about it, I probably would have had some.
Okay,
but no, I don't.
All right, perfect. I put Hindu in a corner and I made him speechless. I
couldn't. I just didn't want to be a dick. That's why I was like, because you're the dick. I was like, dick. So yeah. I'm like, I won't do that. You know, it'd be nice.
All right. So thanks for coming on the show, Hindu. I appreciate it. Always like talking to you. Haven't seen enough of you since the last time I saw you was Worlds, and you were running around. Not even this.
As always.
No. Wow. It wasn't even this Worlds. Before. It was. Yeah. It was year. It's been a year and a half almost.
Yeah.
God. And you. I'll never forget. You were running around that goddamn trench coat. Like, I'm too busy to talk to you. Goodbye.
All the time. That's all I do at Worlds. Every single time, because it's like multiple teams, multiple departments to talk to. Also try and get a break. Also trying to eat food. Don't forget you got a cast. Don't forget you still got to watch those games too. Shit, what with the picks and bans? You missed those. Oh shit, did that get banned? No, it didn't. Oh, hi. Do you want an autograph? Hi, how are you doing? You want a photo? Oh, cool. Neat. Oh, they got a double kill. Sweet. Okay. Yeah, that's my life for the entire time. And then I'll get back to my hotel and then people want to have drinks with me. And I'm like, I just want to go to bed, guys. And I feel really bad, but I'm like, nope.
That's what the after party's for.
Yeah, and then the after party, I'm like, okay, now everybody wants photos, and I just want to get shit-faced.
All right, so I'm going to let you go for real this time. Thanks for coming on. We'll see you. It's coming up this will after the break, but happy birthday, Monday.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
I hope you have a good time.
On Monday, I get older as shit. I get even older. Yeah. I'm starting to feel my age, and it's terrible. So,
all right.
Yeah,
so,
thanks for that.
Have a great time doing whatever you're doing, and look forward to seeing the rest of the SBL and what kind of script you've written for us this year.
Hey, appreciate it, man. All right. See you later.
See you later.